Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even on a budget? Quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, and welcome back to the Grief Gang podcast with me, your host, Amber Jeffrey. The message behind the Grief Gang is to normalise the topic of conversation that is grief. People living with grief can often feel ashamed, isolated, and alone. This podcast was created to break those taboos after I, myself, experienced all of those feelings after the loss of my mum in 2016. I decided enough was enough and we need to talk about this. You'll hear on this podcast an array of stories and experiences, some being my own and some being fantastic guest episodes and their incredible stories. You'll laugh, you'll cry, but I hope above all, I hope you'll learn. I hope you'll learn that you are not alone in your grief journey, that you have a voice and it should be heard, that you and your grief matter. So without further ado, I'll let you enjoy the episode. Happy listening. Everybody, and welcome back to the Grief Gang podcast with me, your host, Amber Jeffrey. Yet again, another wonderful guest episode, but not just one guest. I'm giving you two guests today. These two wonderful women, as soon as one of them, she slid into my DMs and told me about all what she was doing, I actually became obsessed, and it's now just become a beautiful, I'm going to say we're friends because we're friends out here, and I am loving what they're doing, and I cannot wait to share their story and their bloody charity with you. So without further ado, I would like to introduce Emma and Amelia, the founders of Suicide & Co. Charity. Girls, thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Good, Amber, you are most definitely a friend. That was some embarrassing Instagram stalking, just forcing not one of us upon you, but two of you. Hey, I want to be a friend, and my friend wants to be your friend too.
100%.
But thank you so much for having us on.
Oh no, thank you. It's been long awaited, and we've had so many conversations before. I mean, me and you, Emma, offline. And Amelia, I can't believe this is the first time I'm meeting you as well. And I'm so...
I know.
As you said, obviously, Emma is more on social, so that's sort of why. But I cannot wait. There's two of you, the absolute duo behind Suicide & Co. Yeah. How's this week been for you? I mean, I know it's been a busy one, and we'll go into sort of why that is. You want to tell the people why it is, and then we'll go a bit more into it later as well.
Yeah,
I love this with the duo because you never know who's going to talk. I love that.
I'm excited. Who's going to go? No, it's just been a very busy week because we've been doing our t-shirts, which
Look
we've
at
seen
those.
You in as well.
Yes,
one
I have got mine.
Big time. Yeah. So no, we've been doing that, which has just been going incredibly, incredibly well. And actually, the fact that it's going really well has just like meant loads more work, which has been fab.
Yeah.
If not a tad stressful, but really good.
Absolutely. It's sort of like the best kind of stress, isn't it? I mean, it is the thing with best kind of stress. I mean, like, stress for me is actually like, right now. But all the good reasons, for all the good reasons. Oh, well, girls, so the people, they are just on your name, but tell them a little bit about who you are. Who are you?
So the loud northern voice is Emma, and I'm from Bradford. I've been in London for 10 years, and as Amber already said, I'm one half of Suicide & Co, which is a charity that helps those grieved by suicide. And the reason that two of us as two halves have come together as one person to start the charity is because we both lost a parent to suicide, a decade ago now. I work in podcasting.
Yeah.
So it's quite weird being on a podcast. That's me in a little nutshell. I'm usually blonde. I'm currently ginger. Thoroughly excited to be coming out of lockdown.
Oh, babe, tell me about it. Oh. Part of me is still in a little cocoon, though. I'm still in a little cocoon. I'm like, I don't think I'm ready just yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not ready.
No.
I'm not ready from a work perspective. I'm like, hang on a second. I've now got to have a hangover and do my work. No.
Yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Girlies, thank you so much for that. And so this is the part where we just go into a little bit about your stories. As you both just said there, you've been bereaved by suicide over 10 years ago. And yeah, if you are comfortable with going to about your story, about who it is that you lost, as little or as much as you like. Take the stage, either one of you.
Sure. I'll go. So as Emma said, the reason we're connected is because we both lost a parent to suicide. It's not the same parent. We are not related. Yeah. But I lost my mum to suicide 10 years ago. I am an only child, and my parents got divorced when I was 3. So my mum was kind of like a real, my main parent to start off my life with. I lived with her. I had never lived with my dad. She was just the most amazing woman. She was silly and creative and incredibly warm and made everybody laugh. And just the snugglier of all. And unfortunately, she suffered with mental health a lot, and she was diagnosed with bipolar. Now, when she died, I was 19, and I wasn't sort of aware of all of it, but I was aware of some of it. I even remember to the point where the year before she died, one of our trustees now is a girl that I went to school with, and her mum very sadly took her in life the year before my mum. And we actually weren't very close at school, but I remember ringing my mum to be like, please promise me that you're never going to do this. So even though we'd never had those like really deep conversations, I definitely knew a bit. But sadly, it totally took me by surprise, and lost her to suicide when I was 19. And the rest of my journey has just been a massive grief journey that's ended up, I mean, it has been 10 years. I found the first couple of years incredibly difficult to process. But I would say, and even now, like I would say, I'm still processing parts of it. So it's been, you know, a very long journey, but ultimately, you know, as we all know, you never stop sort of like missing that person. And I don't really know where else I'm going with that story, but that's kind of in a nutshell what I would describe my story as.
Yeah, no, thank you, that's absolutely perfect. Thank you, Amelia. Emmy Poo.
Isn't it weird whenever you hear, and you will have this all the time, Amber, whenever you hear somebody else telling you their grief story, your heart just collapses. Like, So as Amelia said, it wasn't the same parents, and we're not related. The accent probably gives that away a little bit. we are just the best of buds. So dissimilar to Amelia's story, I'm one of two. So I've got I've got a little sister who is my absolute world, Abigail. And she's still up in the north with my mum as well. Mum's just incredible as well. I'm very lucky to be surrounded by incredibly strong women. We were just a small little family unit, four of us, the grandparents, and so much has changed in the last 10 years because now it's just me, mum, Abigail, and a lovely partner. But my grief story is me bumbling around it, so I don't have to say it still. Yeah. Isn't it weird how you're like, oh? So dad passed away, 11 years ago, and to suicide. So sadly, we lost him to mental health. He wasn't really unwell at all until the 2 years prior, or at least he wasn't diagnosed until 2 years prior, and the 2 years prior to that were really hard. I think particularly for my mum, because I was actually at uni when it happened. I was 20. And he had pretty severe bipolar, was always described, and I know that you hear this so often when we talk about mental health and the education part of it. You never knew with my dad. He was the life and soul of a party, like from a big Irish family, big party, all the laughter, all the loves, all the giggles and all of that. But just deeply, deeply sad, and just deep-rooted sadness that just manifested in such a way that there wasn't any way out of it. I suppose it's good to give details around this, but it wasn't a case of us ever having concerns of him attempting suicide, or because it just wasn't, it never happened until the day that it did happen. And me and Amelia speak about this at length. The different experiences around suicide is just fascinating. So we didn't get left a letter, and everybody has this film fantasy of everyone gets left a letter, and it's beautiful, like anything you would expect, and we just didn't have that. It was just a full stop to a really turbulent 2 years of sadness. And
Emma, that's such a poignant way to point that. Just a full stop. So it's just a full stop to that, and then it's you've been given that full stop, and like sort of like how do you then begin, quote unquote, your next sentence, which is your life, and continue. And so for you both, Emma, you being 20, and Amelia, you being 19, what did those early years of your 20s look like?
Loads of weed.
I mean, I was a car.
Lots of weed.
True. No, not lots.
I ain't shaming.
I don't know whether that's legit on this podcast. Just came out of my mouth. No.
Anything goes.
It wasn't like too much. I mean, for me, what I thought was really interesting in the first 2 years is everybody was always like, oh, God, like, we're nervous she's going to go off the rails and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, actually, I kind of mastered the art of just staying just on the rails. Like, I didn't I was kind of just keeping my shit together and just trying to plod along, really. Mm-hmm. Like, I had a lot of, like, sort of admin stuff to sort. I didn't have anywhere to live. I had to come back. I had to look, you know, see if I could live with my dad, see if I could live on my own. I ended up living on, you know, I had uni to finish. I just kind of like the first couple of years for me were just like survival mode. I don't know about you, well, I do, but what's your
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do as folk.
I'm pretty sure I do know, but
I
love that.
I don't know about you, Em. Like, you know, we run a charity together, and I've probably not heard your story before. love that.
Oh dear. For me, so I'm a real get up and fight sort of person, and I was so angry with my dad and so cross with the world for handing me this shit stick of a situation. Yeah. And it's like, I'm in my final year of university. Everything should be really fun and about me. This is going to be the only time in my life I shouldn't be dominated by something else. I had loads of anger, real anger issues. Abigail, my younger sister, will be listening to this and she'll be like, it was a nightmare. And I insisted on going back to uni, even though mm-hmm. I really shouldn't have. So I insisted on going back to uni, was just made lots of bad decisions, just, yeah, lost a lot of friends because nobody at that age mm-hmm. really knows how to deal with death, yeah. let alone mm-hmm. suicide. Mm-hmm. And then I actually did, so I did a couple of months at uni and then realised it was a very silly decision. And I went to University of Chester and they were incredibly supportive and they suggested just deferring and just saying, yeah. So I took a bit of time out and just went home. Abigail was doing her GCSE, so it was nice to be around to like yeah. help mum out a bit. And we still had grandparents on. So my granddad was, my granddad had had a stroke a few years previous, so he was really quite unwell. So just so yeah, just was helping around, and yeah, and then it just got back on track and life started to move on and got better. And then the anger probably faded about yeah. 2 years ago. Yeah. So I really carried yeah, it for a long time. And then met Amelia, and the grief conversation took a different
realm. Yeah, well, you've absolutely touched on that. Direction. So I want to know how did you two meet and came to be? How have you come across each other in life? Who's going to tell the love story?
Oh, yeah, it's a very good love story. Oh. It's a real meet cute. Mm. We were working together and we were like, we're both in cinema advertising and we were supposed to be going to this conference and the conference was a bit shit. And instead we were like, didn't know each other very well at the time. We were like, should we just go and like have a drink? And, like talk, work stuff, yeah, yeah. But, like go and have a drink. Went and had a drink, bottle of wine down. Suddenly Emma was the one that really realized that as we were talking about like our family situations, she just had that like instinct, right, Em, that you were like, oh, you're not mentioning something mm-hmm. here. And
yeah,
that kind of opened it up. And we said,
you know, just how someone's yeah. reacting. And I am a little bit witchy.
Yeah, you are.
A little bit spiritual, but everyone always goes, Emma's a bit yeah. witchy. And I just remember, I remember in the moment, I said, what are you, because it was just before Christmas, and really weird timing. It was actually the night before my grandma passed away, and we were super close. So, oh, weird yeah, universe yeah. moment. But I remember just saying, what are you doing for Christmas? And you telling me, and I remember instantly thinking, oh, mum must have passed away. And then you said something else, and I remember thinking, her reaction all screams to some sort of shame right. death.
And at that point, like I hadn't really had conversation with somebody about yeah. that specificity or somebody in a similar situation to me really ever before. And I think then everybody, we kind of kept talking, and then Emma came up with the name, pulled me into a meeting room, and I don't think you didn't ask me to be a part of it. I just was like, I'll do it with you.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, I mean, every intention yeah. was. I was just yeah. feeling it out. So I was like, what do you think about this? And before I even got to the second sentence, really was like, I will.
I will.
I will do that with you.
Love yeah. that. So then with that, Emma, so you'd sussed out. So when was the moment where you both kind of went, yeah, I've lost a parent to suicide too? Was it just kind of like the unsaid... Emma had sussed out.
It was Emma.
Yeah, and then yeah. I think that, and then we had another. We had another bottle of wine, and I just yeah. blurted it out. I just said, "Oh, did mum die from suicide?" And then we stopped for a little bit in the pub, and then just carried on
Love
drinking.
That.
It's just I can't even pinpoint. I never. It was probably an accumulation of things, but I just, and I've never yeah. had that before with anyone where I've gone. Yeah, I don't know, weird. Maybe it was, I don't know, some sort of universe magnet. Yeah,
that's the witchiness. That's whatever. The witchiness. Anything is like, well, I just saw this.
Yeah, I love it. So then, Emma, so then after that, you've gone away. So by the sounds of it, the idea of suicide and co was in your head already. And then, so what was that sparked that for you where I'm going to start a charity and support people?
I think for me, it was I think for me, it was knowing how hard it is going through suicide bereavement. And nobody really, there's not really, there wasn't a resource there 10 years ago. When we looked into it, there still wasn't huge progression. And for me, it was just a case of how can I make it easier for anyone else who's going to have to go through this? And me and Amelia speak about this a lot, and we have an awful lot of guilt around, should we be putting all of our time and energy into the prevention side? Because we've been affected by mental health in one way or another by losing someone to it. And but we just felt that space is so, it's just, it's dominated by brilliant forces. So whether it's Samaritans or Mind or Calm, there are multitudes of them. And then you've got brilliant, you've got the brilliant like the crews in bereavement for suicide, well, bereavement on a whole, but well, there's loads, isn't there, without name checking everyone. But we just felt there still wasn't anything specifically for suicide bereavement. And we really, we never want to get into the idea of grief Olympics, because we think all grief is valid and all grief is traumatic and horrific in its own right. But we do think a lot of people who go through suicide bereavement just feel like they don't have a place for their loss and their feelings, because there's still a lot of miseducation around it, and a lot of people still go, well, it's a choice. And it's difficult. So that's it was just hoping that other people weren't going to be as lost as I was.
And you touched on a really good point there of sort of how, like, you know, there's the likes of like Cruise and so many other charities and as such, but nothing specifically for suicide bereavement. And as you say, you know, we can all relate to each other on a whole, to a degree, but as you touched on earlier, like, you felt anger towards your dad, you felt anger, and finding a space where potentially, you know, you might be being supported or in like a support group or something like that, where it's predominantly deaths by cancer, heart attacks, stuff like that, and there's people, not, and this isn't saying that, you know, you don't love your dad or that you don't feel the love, but these people aren't angry at them. They're not angry at their loved ones for dying. And grief is alienating and isolating as it is. And then having that added feeling, again, mixed feelings of feeling anger towards your person, it absolutely deserves, like, I don't want to say separate space, but an individual space to explore that and unpack that. And then so...
yeah,
it's absolutely the unpacking and the peeling back of that layers. Yeah, absolutely. So then, okay, so then you've had this idea, and then what was it? Was it always a charity idea?
Well, I mean, Amelia is 100% the velocity and energy behind everything we actually do, because I have a million ideas a day, but I don't have the intention to carry
too many tabs.
So actually, if Amelia were totally. So yeah, it was a very small idea, and it was always going to be non-profit. And then when we did the research, we just felt that the charity space was right, and we had a friend who is still a very dear trustee and part of our law side of the charity, and she advised that it was the right decision to make.
Wow.
And here
fantastic.
We are.
Fantastic. So what I find it so mad, just the thought, I could imagine you two just sat in that little pub or that bar a bottle of wine, and after that moment, it's okay, you've had the conversation, you found out that about each other, you've now had the idea about the charity. When you've introduced the charity to the world, what were both your first thoughts? Were you like, fuck, this is real?
Oh my god, 100%. I gave a presentation on this literally last week, and it was like the most cathartic process to go through the journey. I mean, like, I do not recognize myself from 2 years ago sat in that pub. Like, the amount that I have learned and we have changed, and also, like, at the start, we used to meet every Tuesday when we were like figuring out what we were going to do, whether we were going to do, like, because we talked about suicide specific grief support. There is a charity out there that are national, they're heritage, they're good, they're really good. They do peer to peer. So we did like lots of analysis at the start, being like,
is there a space? Like, we don't want to rewrite the wheel. And where we came across is like counseling and offering that as our service. But as you can tell from Emma's original name, like, Suicide and Co is the one that hit me. Like, I was like, I get it immediately. I love that you're doing something different. Great. When we actually got to the point of like telling the world, I mean, we started to like tell friends and family, and it was all like really cozy. I think the biggest moment that freaked me out, I wonder whether it's the same for Emma, it's like we did, I was so secure in the analysis around the fact that nobody else was doing what we were doing, because I didn't want to get out there and be like, oh, well, actually you're stealing that person's share, or you're like, whatever. But when we got onto Instagram, I was suddenly like, oh my God, who are all of these people? And then, like we were just saying earlier this evening, it was like a massive bear hug of like, welcome to the grief community. Like, we're incredibly supportive, because, you know, we did not factor that in. And now it's like my one piece of advice I say to everyone. I'm like, don't worry about Google. Look on Instagram who is out there, and like check the space for you there, because it's the new model of support. Like, charities, of course, have an incredible space, but the model of support that Instagram is giving through these unique chat is just amazing. So that was, for me, the moment that I was like, oh my God, terrifying. But since then, it's been lovely.
Yeah, like you're entering. It's been lovely. Is that you're entering the world. And it's so fun. Everyone who I speak to on the podcast, or off outside the podcast, who have either started pages or, you know, been introduced, they literally go like, it's opening this door. And this massive bear hug, and it's, and it can be overwhelming, because you're like, in a way, you're like, fuck, this is great, and you're like, shit, where have you been? Like, where have you been for the last, like, for you guys, like 8 years, 9 years, 10 years, and then like, I was like, fuck me, I could have done with this about 3 years ago, and it's just, you wish within our societies and our like conversations, and you know, if you go to like your, in a weird way, like when you would go to your GP or be like, I'm not doing okay, they in a weird way be like, go on Instagram. Like, I just wish they kind of like prescribed you Instagram.
Oh my God. Social prescribing. I read
Social prescribing. Absolutely.
We have
I think it's definitely happening in the therapy rooms. It's happening there for sure. I know that.
And like, people I see, and obviously I can't speak for everyone, but some of the women and men that I've met, and adults as well of an older generation, even over the last year or so, I'm like, your progression of where you are at, on your journey, is where it took me 8 years. Yeah. And like, the fact that you're into already integrating with us, you're already talking to us, like, that's fantastic. And I know it's like hard to measure, but it's amazing how far we've come, I think, and how, you know, much closer we are to being able to support people if they can find us.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a massive tool helper.
But isn't that mental? It's like, grief and death and bereavement is becoming mainstream because of social media. I'm pretty sure it should have always been mainstream, because it's the one thing that affects everyone. Oh, it's like, sorry, that's happening. It's not like a subculture. It's like everybody going.
Emma, you're preaching to the choir. Because, and it's just, it really is, isn't it? It really is. And I found myself sort of having those conversations, having those thoughts too, of especially within this last year, it's a bit of a tangent of just how in this last year, obviously, death has been so heavily rammed down our throats and in our face all the time, and rightly so. But like, sort of like the spotlights and media, it's kind of like it's got the hot lamp and shining on like our community. And it's like, ooh, look at all these people doing all fantastic stuff. And it's like, fuck me, I've been here for fucking years. And there's people who've been here for time doing this way before, almost like way before, in a fucked way, way before death was cool. Way before talking about death and grief was cool, and showing that you can express it was cool. It's like, we were here before this, and that's not that's not shitting on anybody who has found in this last year their expression to do it within this last year. It's more of a slew towards like media. It kind of feel like, you know, the light was on us for like a good year, and then now it's kind of like going, and I'm like, come the fuck back, like.
Totally. But I mean, rewind even further back. If you remember, like, all of the prints that we've done, The majority of those are by people that are either dead themselves or like really, really old, old authors. Like Aristotle, like these people that have been around forever, they were talking about then and it just wasn't picked up.
I know. For something that's crazy.
Shameless plug.
Yeah, get the print.
We actually that do some really plug. Nice. That we was actually a... do some really nice self-care prints too. Go to our website.
Love that, love that. Well, that'll lead me quite into just sort of like if somebody comes to Suicide & Co's Instagram or your website, what are they expecting? If there's somebody who has been bereaved by suicide and they come across you, what can they expect to be supported by the charity?
Many
of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Instantly going to get a tiny part of mine in the immediate part because but it's really, really bright and it's comforting and the door's open and it's just normalizing all the things that we take for granted as being simple, i.e. having a conversation, and just really reinforcing that suicide loss is isolating, but a lot of grief is isolating, and you absolutely are alone.
And then you said earlier,
and then we have
are you talking about the
this is classic me. I'm just gonna go into the operational side of it.
Go for it.
But we have a help hub on there, which is like, it kind of looks a bit like a blog, but it's essentially just we're really proud of it because essentially like it signposts to other resources, but it tells you like this isn't just this charity over here, like this is why this is relevant to somebody that would be going through suicide related grief or just grief. It just breaks it down a little bit, and then we curate things like the podcast and books and signposts to people doing brilliant things that are just a little bit less like, you know, a bit more light touch than a resource. And then we also surface lived experience. Like we want more stories about people that have been bereaved by suicide in, you know, any type of format or whatever. So we're trying to surface as much as we can of that. And then we have our counselling service, and that's how people can apply to the counselling service.
That part I really want to get into that as well, because when I saw, I think I saw on your stories like a couple of months ago, sort of like, you know, we've now funded X amount of things, I was like, oh, it made me emotional because I was like, what I do when I see things like that, I just imagine like the people in the room, like I imagine the people in the room getting that service and getting that help, and that's from you. And how,
oh my god,
and does it, but it's mega emotional, isn't it? Mega emotional. Yeah.
Getting applicants was the biggest game changer.
Yeah.
And it was after such a huge amount of work of like us, like literally just like four steps forward, like 10 steps backwards, like falling down this hill, being like, oh my God, there's a reason why there isn't a national counselling service set up already. Do you know, like, all of that stuff? Oh, people don't do counselling because it's really expensive. That's why people do groups, like all of these types of things. But, you know, it's been, we got to the point and we moved really quickly just so that we could try and get it off the ground. And it's been fantastic. Mm. And so far we've had like 32 applicants, going to be super transparent. We've been going for just over a month. We've done like, we're trying to launch very gradually because we are nervous about being overwhelmed, obviously.
Of course.
And we've got space for more. And so now we're just kind of pushing it out there and trying to get as many people as help as possible. And we've got big, big plans to kind of, you know, allow it to scale for the huge numbers that we have to serve. Essentially.
Yeah. And you said, yeah, for the future, but like 32 people, 32 lives that you're helping. That must be such an incredible feeling. And is it quite like, can it be quite, I know for myself as well, sort of even people say, grief gangs help me, etc. like that. And I'm like, I'm so glad it's helped you, but I hate the fact that it actually has to help you. Like, I hate the fact that you even have to be here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I finally found the line that I email people with when they get in touch saying they want to help. Mm-hmm. I finally found the line that I feel comfortable with saying, like, thank you so much for reaching out. I'm so sad that we're meeting under these circumstances, but I'm so happy that we're meeting with a common purpose to help people, because I kept stumbling for ages. And I was like, that's actually exactly what I mean. Like, and now I say that to everyone. And
it's not like, you know, saying, oh, like, thanks, you know, you can't be like, thanks for coming in, like, you know, kind of like, it's not something like that. And it's you're being honest and you're going, it's fucking shit that you have to be here. And I say all the time as well, I'm like, it's fucking shit that you have to be here and that you even have to resonate with my staff. But I would say you're in good company and you're with good people and you're around people who are going to get it and who are going to help you, and that's exactly what you're doing. I wanted to ask you about mum and dad. I want to ask you about them. What were they like? What were they like as parents? What was it like growing up? Tell us about them. What are their names?
You go,
Oh my god, he's gonna cry.
I'll cry with you. I'm an absolute crier.
I actually did bring tissues out of my handbag earlier on, just in case. So my dad was called Gerald to everyone here. However, weird Irish Catholic thing. His name was actually Patrick Gerald. Patrick Gerald Morrishow. And I don't think I found that out until I was about 12, because everyone just called him Gerald or Jez or Jerry. He was a carpenter in classic tradie nature, would always get everyone else's jobs done, but mum was always waiting for the house to get it done up because couldn't be bothered. Really silly, great fun, really proud to be Irish descent. Had like mad, always like mad auburnish hair that was always a bit scraggy, and he always wanted a beard, and mum was always like, don't have a beard, Gerald, you look horrible. And he was just really warm and fun, but equally, just the last 2 years, it's really hard to remember all of the good parts, because the last 2 years, you just go, oh, you were just so combative all the time and so miserable and so argumentative and so done with life in a lot of ways. But thinking past that, and he was, I suppose the only way to describe him, a bit of a firecracker, a total handful. It's quite funny I'm sure mum will listen to this and howl at this. It's the classic thing of, if ever me or my sister have got a bad quality, it's my dad's fault. It's that sort of, you know, when you go, poor timekeeping, that's your dad.
Your dad's
getting drunk, that's your dad. But he was just a massive people pleaser, and always he's, Abigail will resonate with this when she hears this, no matter where you went, from Bradford, no matter where you went, if you were in London, if you were in Newcastle, if you were in Dublin, if you were in Alicante, you would always bump into someone who knew my dad or one of his, like, big love character that. That was
I'm loving it. Alicante. Someone knows him. That's brilliant. And Amelia, what was your mum like?
My mum was called Cindy or Lucinda. I said at the start, you know, she was just this so silly. Like, she had just an incredible heart, and we would just have the most ridiculous times together. Like, she was obsessed with musicals. I'm obsessed with musicals. She was just like always up for playing. Like I, as an only child, used to be so into imaginary games. I used to put a stool against the sitting room and she'd just walk past doing her normal day and I'd be like, oh, hello, madam. Would you like to check in? She'd be like, straight into improvisation.
She was at a hotel.
I was wondering how long she'd stay for, how many nights. I'd go into the middle of the kitchen. She'd be like, hurry up the laundry. And I'd be like, sorry, Miss Whiten, but George is being so badly behaved. I mean, nutter, right?
And loved
she was
it.
The best. Yeah, literally.
Creative.
The best. So creative. And just always. I mean, she was there for everybody. She was just the most warming, accepting, empathetic individual. And a lot of it stemmed for she had a bit of a shit stick. Like she got a lot of stuff thrown at her. You know, she had postnatal depression. She had lots of issues with her feet. She just had lots of issues that came at her physically, which ended up, you know, manifesting very badly mentally. She was also bipolar and, you know, that creative energy for anybody that's, you know, lived with somebody who has bipolar, that creative energy, a manic episode can come out in the most like awesome version of yourself. Like I'd go home and I would be like sort of delayed on my RA level and she would have turned the sitting room into an art studio. Yeah. And all that meant was we had two armchairs and she'd just move them to one side and there was just like space to do art. And other times I go home and all we would do is sit there with a bottle of Diet Coke each, packet of fags, and we'd just watch musicals. And that was a low point, but I felt so connected and snuggly to her.
Yeah.
And this one of the saddest parts was she, before she died, had an incredible manic up, like huge up. Mm-hmm. She started a business doing things that would have benefited so many people. She worked in an old people's home and she then went to set up an entertainment agency where people could go in and entertain old people's homes. Mm. And it was just getting off the ground and it was nailing it. And she got artists and care homes signed up. And then when the next down hit, it was the catastrophic one.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
It was a really
high But she high. Was amazing and so many people love and resonate and miss her to this day, obviously hugely. So
yeah,
that was mummy.
Oh, thank you girls. Thank you for sharing that with me. And one last question for both of you with them, just in a couple of words if you want. What did their love feel like for you?
I'm gonna cry.
That's all right. That's okay.
I would say like the word that's coming to me is probably like unconditional, you know, like losing a parent to suicide, you know, or anybody to suicide, you know, that unconditional love that you have with a parent is what it feels like. And that's what, you know, is obviously then the extra heartbreaking. But that bond was there and that bond was amazing and that bond was it was amazing.
Yeah, unconditional.
Honestly.
I've never met anyone who composes himself so fast after crying.
Right? I'm not.
Amelia. Yeah, you're just brilliant. No, you're brilliant. I suppose it's always best to be honest, especially in these conversations where people might be seeking help for their own experience and they don't feel like they fit. I just don't remember that feeling. And it was so complicated for my dad because of all that anger that I told you about. And I was just a really moody teenager for a big part of my life who just argued with my dad. And I think when you lose parents so young, it's kind of hard to know how you feel now. Because I just remember being a moody, furious, angsty Avril Lavigne fan, teenager from being like 13 to 18. And then I just wasn't there. I was at uni, so I don't even really remember it. But I always remember like when we look at pictures and my dad and Abigail were particularly close. And I always remember the way that he loved her Like, that's why I remember, and you go, oh, that's so special. Because she was little, and I remember how brilliant he was with her, even though I was a moody teenager. I can't remember what that felt like, but it's complicated.
It's complicated in itself. A complicated one. Yep. That's completely fine. That's completely valid. Absolutely. Thank you for that. One of my other questions. So, as we know, you starting up Suicide & Co., is to start the conversation, open the conversation, keep talking, as we know, the taglines. And there is so much more work to do around how we speak about suicide, how we address it, how we destigmatize it. And as you touched on earlier, people saying it's a choice and things like that. Mm. So I wanted to ask you both, what are some of the taboos around suicide, like the big taboos that you wish were broken, and how we collectively together can get there?
Should I start? we're super aligned in everything that we think about this. And obviously, the most important thing is, like, it changes, like, we're constantly developing. It's such a new subject. It still is so stigmatized. Like, when we had our Christmas drinks, me and Emma, last year of lockdown, we were still debating things and, like, moving around with things in our heads. So it's definitely not set in stone. I mean, I think the biggest thing is like we were saying, people thinking it's a choice. I think the thing that everybody hopefully will move towards is that people are choosing to die to end the pain. They are not choosing to die. Like, if you know, that is kind of the biggest thing. All of the research shows around that they get into a state of just total pain. They want the pain to end, and it's not bigger than that. That is the tunnel vision moment. And so I think that's a big education piece. Anything that comes out, like, I mean, I hear less of it. I really do. Things like it's selfish, it's cowardly, all of those things need to fuck off. And then I guess it's a bigger...
Just judgment. Yeah. There's no judgment.
Yeah. It's just, it's still hard to talk about, for sure. In some areas, way more than others. And I think sometimes it's hard even to remember through platforms like Instagram that are welcoming and open around smaller, more, rural or less, like, digitally savvy communities. These conversations fundamentally at a base level aren't happening. Yeah. There are families hiding the fact that it was a suicide. Mm-hmm. There are people back in, like, when it happened with my mum, there was big things that we didn't do because of shame that was within the family, not my closest family, but the wider family. I don't know if I've answered the question or just gone on a huge rant.
No, perfect. Absolutely. Thank you. No.
No. Yeah, I think you're spot on with that. And I think anything around judgment or anything around, it's gossip, isn't it? You know, the classic thing of, I wonder why, do you think it's money worries, or, do you think they were hiding this? What do you think? Like, there should basically be no room for that. Like, that is dirty and vile and gross. And I think progressively we are stopping, nobody should really be saying commit or committed because of the legal terms around that. And just to add to what Amelia said, because I think it's really interesting, the whole point of hiding, because stigma and shame pushes people underground and you hide from reality. I think something very real is people are embarrassed about saying we lost one to suicide. And I don't think that's often helped, because especially around mental health awareness, and it's so important, and we are the biggest number one advocates of it. But actually, when you're speaking to people who've been bereaved by suicide, I personally, and this isn't for everyone, but I personally find it really triggering being told constantly, just talk. Mm. Talking makes people stay. Just talk. Mm. And you know, we had talked solidly for 2 years with professionals, with everybody who would have listened. And I think it's just being mindful with any situation in life, whether it is death and grief and suicide, or just anything that is potentially triggering, just be mindful. If you've not walked a mile in that person's shoes, should you really have an opinion on it?
Sure. Mm. Yeah.
It's, yeah, I agree with
and
that.
Amelia, you touched on this sort of like how sort of like on Instagram too, sort of like socially on the internet, the conversation is happening, and I suppose could we say it's an age thing? But more people who are Instagram, but as you say, more deeper, rural, and sort of actually outside in the real world. That is what, and as you touched on there, sort of saying you don't really hear much of those horrible comments or those wrong terminologies. But yeah, in outside communities, they're there, and you see it, like,
yeah,
you see it rear its ugly head. I find especially that these people still exist. And it's as you probably both imagine, where we are so immersed in the grief community and what we consume mostly each day is people being mindful and respectful and learning.
Yeah.
So when we step out of that and we go back into our like everyday world and we come across people who, you know, you might tell them about your loss and they're kind of a bit, oh, and or they might ask, how does it happen? You think, hang on a fucking minute. You think, I've not been asked that for how long? And you really realize sometimes in this moment, I feel like there's not one person who doesn't know about like me and my grief and like my journey and what I'm doing. But then when you step out and sometimes you do speak to strangers in whatever capacity that may look like, and you tell them about it, someone's like, oh, you sit on the internet and talk about death or grief, or you sit on the internet and talk about suicide and bereavement. And I think, fuck me, have you just come under your rock? Like, it's baffling.
It's so true. And the service, if anything, seeing referrals through the service has been really eye-opening again, and a real reaffirmation of like, okay, cool, there are a lot of people there out there who are having those types of conversations and or not. And literally I've seen, you know, things around talking to neighbors and feeling isolated within their communities and everything. Yeah. And we had a situation the other day where, you know, somebody's contacting us around the only way that they would be able to access the service is landline. So I was like, yeah, I can arrange telephone counseling. But then hang on a second. How are they going through our triage process? It's all online, you know, like that's the way that we've set, you know, it's so much. And a big part of our strategy is integrating into the directories, the local bereavement specialists, the GP surgery. We have to, otherwise we will not get to, you know, the people that we need to as well. And I think it's just, it's that area. There's a lot of support that everybody on Instagram and everybody that's in our closer network needs. The taboos for me are less of the like core community we have, more of the rural. The people that we're wider, with need the support big time, but the rural, like wider society, I'm not even saying rural, I'm just saying wider society need that taboo piece big time. And we're working on a project at the moment to try and tackle that.
That's fantastic. You're seeing it bigger than like Instagram and social media. Like, as much as it's fantastic that you're being able to meet and connect with these people on social media, you recognize that, not that this isn't enough, but you're like, there's more people that need help and they may not have accessibility to this via online. So how do we reach them? That's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Well, I'll go.
Being disconnected in this day and age is so hard, wasn't it? And just so isolating. Yeah.
But then we say that, though. Then I see people that aren't on platforms and la, 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 happy as a clam.
It's true.
And I'm like, could you get on it? Because I'd like to be able to see what you had for brunch. Like, genuinely, that's what I'd like to see. I have one friend who doesn't have Instagram, but her boyfriend does. And whenever she's in his Instagram, I'm like, cool. What are you up to over there?
She's like, you're like pan the camera on her.
I also see her and I'm like, did you not know I've got my hair done? I've done it on Instagram, so why would you not know that? Do you know what I mean? It's that whole
mad, isn't it? It's mad.
Life experience is outside of the screen.
Like, you're living outside of the devil's square. Like, you're living outside of it. What? Christ, I wish I wasn't.
Don't look at me. Yeah, I'm
literally, I've not got the Paris filter. Brilliant. Oh, well, girls, I've come to my last question for you. This is a question that I ask all of my guests, and it's one of my favourite questions. So it is, if you could go back to your pre-bereaved self and give yourself some useful and helpful advice for the journey you're about to go on, what would it be? I find with this question, for every person who's asked it, it just transports you back into that moment of when you found out the news. And you take some time with it. Don't have to answer immediately. Take your time.
I mean, I've got the usual cliche and I do listen, so I know that a lot of people say this, but it is just the truest, just the case of you will be okay and you will survive this and brighter days will come. But I think the only other thing, probably this is a personal level as a person, I don't know how helpful it would be for everyone else. You're not too emotional. As somebody who's always been made to feel like I am too emotional, now that I'm the other side of 30 and really comfortable with my emotions because of going through that level of grief so young, bring your authentic self wherever you go. Like, if you need to cry in a public place or at work or at a dinner party or wherever the hell you are, just embrace it. It's part of you, and being your authentic self, and it's empowering to know that your emotions are yours and you can live through them.
That speaks to me. So, yeah. That really speaks to me as well. Yeah. Love that. Thank you. From one sobber to another, literally. Amelia?
I would say, and I know we've just talked about talking, but I would say have the conversations earlier. It took me a much longer time to come to the terms with things like it wasn't a choice and things like that. It really did take me longer to feel. I didn't feel as much anger, but I also didn't go through the full process for a long time. And even now that I've done Suicide & Co, I've had friends of mine be like, yeah, I feel like I got there before. And I'm like, yeah, well, that's fine because it wasn't your loss. But equally, it's like it's watching that from the outside. Like, you know, it took me a while. So I would say that. And the other thing I would say is that, like, home is something you carry around with you. Like, I struggled for a really long time understanding where my home was now that this had happened. And I then realized that it was something that it was inside me and I could carry that feeling around, like, me, myself. So that was another thing I would say.
Thank you, little
that
personal.
Is lovely. That's got me welling up, that.
That tiny little home.
That is.
Yeah.
My tiny little home. I love that. Well, girlies, before we go, please do tell the listeners where they can find you. Plug yourself, plug anything you want them to know that's coming up. Plug it.
You go, Em.
So you can go and find us. So as Amelia said earlier on, we've got a really brilliant resource on our website called The Help Hub. And you can also find out details about our counselling service on there. And just find out a bit more of a charity. So that is www.suicideandco.org. And you can find us at Instagram. So we're friends with Amber. Absolutely. On there. You can find us in her in her followers. And our handle on there is at Suicide & Co. And our last thing, well, two last things. If you do have a lived experience of losing someone to suicide and you want to share your story, we would love to hear from you. We're big talkers, but we're also really big listeners. So send us a video, send us a poem, send us a written article, whatever you would like to put out there into the world. And we also do really, really fun products. We're big believers in, we want to create beautiful things for people to keep. So whether that is self-care prints, which are amazing prints for your house, or our Suicide & Co. bracelets.
Love them.
Which I'm showing to the camera. Or our t-shirts, which are actually only available for a little bit, so they might not be available when you're listening to this. But keep on checking in, because we keep on creating products that you will love, and we couldn't exist without you guys buying them. So thank you.
Amazing. Well, Amelia and Emma, thank you so much today for coming here and speaking with me about all things suicide and co. It's been an absolute pleasure of mine. Grief Gang, I hope you've enjoyed this episode, and I really, really do hope that you go and check out the girls and what they're doing, because what they're doing is so valuable, and I cannot wait to see what is to come and be rooting you girls on through and through, because you're fucking amazing. So Grief Gang. So Grief Gang, this has been me, your host, Amber Jeffrey, with Emma and Amelia from Suicide & Co. Take care. Bye. Well, that's it for this week's episode. I hope you all enjoyed it and it set your week off to a great start. Whether you've laughed a little, cried a little, I mean, I think crying is good for the soul, or you've resonated with something that was said, thank you for listening and spending time out of your day to do so. If you like what you hear, please do rate, review and subscribe. In doing so, you're ensuring that lots more people get to find the Grief Gang podcast and hopefully help them too. If you're not already, check out the Grief Gang on social media platforms such as Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. I'm most active on the Instagram page, where I love, love, love to connect with you all. For now, take care and big, big love.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.